This is not a very Nectarian section of Bhagavatam, some might consider. It was just talking about how we're not this body, boring old subject. Which, better we hear about gopi leaders. However, we should understand that the gopis can be understood by those who understand that we are not the body. Because if we think that the gopis are just like us, material bodies made of blood and stool, and then we can't understand. So this basic knowledge of spiritual life, we see that here Narad Muni is talking to King Prachina Bharisha, who is coming in an exalted family of great, actually great devotees. This Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Ivam Parampara Pratam Imam Raja Shio Viduhu. This knowledge was received in Parampara through the great kings. But this great king, despite being brought up in an exalted family, was devoid of even basic atma-gyan or knowledge of the self. So it is important that we continue, we regularly discuss these topics. We may think that, well, we already know these things, but it's not necessarily so. Rasaraj Prabhu, I don't know him, he doesn't come here hardly, but he's Bhaktivedanta Institute, he's based in West Coast, USA, from South India, from a South Indian Sri Vaishnava family, where up until recently when they all started, not all, but many, worship Sai Baba and the so-called Kalki avatar, or just nothing at all, just no interest in religion. But at least up to his generation, pretty much every Sri Vaishnava family, especially from the Brahmin family, they were worshipping the Lord, Lord Narayana, and Sri. Sri means Lakshmi. Therefore they're known as Sri Sampradaya. So he told me that they had the picture which they in their family had been worshipped for generations, of the picture of Lord Narayana. And he was taught to offer his obeisances every day and follow all the basic rituals of the Sri Vaishnavas. But he had no idea that we're not the body, we're spirit soul, that there's law of karma. He didn't know anything about these things until he read Prabhupada's books when he'd already gone to America for getting a job, or he was working there. And he didn't know what these things were. Similarly, Bhima Prabhu, our god brother, who's president of our ISKCON project in Juhu, Bombay, he told me he'd met some young man in Bombay who'd never heard of Krishna. Krishna, what's that? Never heard. No idea. Of course, he must have at least heard the name Krishna, because there are so many people with the name Krishna in India. I mean, one of the most famous people, they call him LK, but actually his name is Lal Krishna. And Lal, the ex-deputy prime minister. So, he must have heard the name, but he just thought, it's just a name, you know, there's so many names, and most people don't know what their name means. Several times in India, the people have told me their name and said, oh, that's a very nice name. I said, really, what does it mean? They don't know, it's the name of Krishna. They don't know what it means. And so that culture is gone, and therefore, the culture of imparting spiritual knowledge is gone, and therefore everything is gone now. With the invasion of Western, as Prabhupada says here, cow and ass culture. Usually Prabhupada talks about dog and cat culture, but as he's quoting this verse from Bhagavatam, which compares people who have no knowledge of the self is not different from the body, people who don't have this knowledge. Lord Krishna actually speaks this verse in Bhagavatam. Yasyatma buddhi kuna petri dhatuke. He speaks this to the great rishis. He's telling them, they're supposed to be very spiritually advanced, and they are, otherwise how are they having darshan of Lord Krishna? But he speaks this to them, that we're not the body. He speaks it in the context that, praising them actually, saying that people who go to holy places but don't listen from great rishis like yourself, they're no better than cows and asses. So here Prabhupada compares modern civilization to that of cows and asses, and usually to dogs and cats, because, I don't know, dogs and cats are quite openly, I mean, they're all beasts, but dogs and cats are quite openly more bestial, and we tend to see more dogs and cats in the modern world than we do cows and asses. You don't see. I mean, if you live in London, you don't see cows at all, except on the TV. And sometimes they take the children out of the city on a school outing to see cows. So, oh, look, there's a cow. Oh, really? It's not just on the TV. So cows and asses, you hardly see. Do you keep any donkeys here? We were in Slovenia, I was just there, we were staying on a little place on the top of the hill with a donkey. You'd every sort of make his donkey wrong, we thought, no, that's the conch for the arti. At first we were bewildered, because it sounds somewhat similar. Anyway, that's a pretty useless piece of information. So this donkey civilization, Dr. Don Key, great authority. Suhotra Swami recently presented some interviews with Dr. Don Key. Talking about scientific certainty. It's very fun. If you want your philosophy with fun, then go see Suhotra Swami's website. He presents it very, very philosophically and very amusingly also. So it's a weblog, actually. Anyway, so in this donkey civilization, now that's invaded India also, so people, they've lost their culture. How is that possible? How is it possible that with such great knowledge, such tremendous knowledge, there's no comparison to the knowledge given in the Vedic literatures. This, what we have in modern civilization, so many universities in England, every town, that they have two, it seems. Not only they upgraded all their polytechnics to universities, so now they have at least two. There's universities all over the place, every second house or something is a university. But whatever they teach, it doesn't even begin, the highest topics that they teach doesn't even begin to come anywhere near the knowledge taught in the Bhagavatam, or even in the Karmakanda section of the Vedas. They don't. Of course, they may have departments of Indology which study this knowledge, but they study it in the so-called academic manner, in which one can never understand what is the topics of Shastra by understanding in the so-called academic manner, because the academic manner that presupposes that this topic is something for us to dissect and for us to analyze. Rather, it doesn't begin with the submissive attitude required to understand. So it's just like some in the university, some people dissect frogs and some people study ancient Roman history and some people study linguistics and some people study Srimad Bhagavatam, and they attempt to analyze it and dissect it and give their opinions on it, but this is not the way. One can never understand. It's very arrogant to approach the knowledge of Shastra in this manner. So this knowledge that is given in Shastra, that was the basis of the traditional culture in India. But when they stopped teaching, the system of education broke down. The British, they actually had a plan, they were very intelligent in a demoniac way, to break down the culture of India by introducing the Western kind of education. And they succeeded. Because the educational institutions for teaching Veda Gyan, they're practically defunct. And even if a parent wants to send their child to such an institution, first of all, it's difficult to find a place where one can be properly educated in this. And the other thing is that everyone will protest. I know, because another god brother of mine, Tamil president in Baroda, Basu Ghosh Prabhu, who you know very well, he was wanting to send his sons for the Ved Pathshala. But there was so much protest, everyone, no, 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 they have to go and study computers, like yours. So, what will they do in future? They can't get a good job, that's the whole idea. You don't want to get a good job. You want to study the Vedas and get a good promotion to the Krishna Loka. So, but so much protest. And then the children themselves say, no, I want to work day and night, inside out, 15, 16 hours a day, and earn lots of money, and have a heart attack at the age of 35. And why should I study the Vedas? What is the use? You can't earn money. Thinking that the only dogs and cats, cows and asses, the only goal of life is to earn money, in their estimation. So this Vedic culture is broken down, the knowledge is broken down, even though the culture goes on somehow or other, people still visit temples, but due to lack of knowledge in society, even basic spiritual knowledge, we find so many completely bogus organizations which imitate the actual Vedic culture, and people, just like you're saying, Swami Narayana, they're completely bogus. They've imagined that some Sahajanand Swami is Bhagavan. They don't know what Bhagavan means even. And so many like that, these two Sai Babas, and I was saying this Kalki avatar and so on. Anyone can get up, anyone who's got the guts to do so can stand up and claim himself to be God. People will accept, because there's no knowledge of the purpose of life. There's no Vedic knowledge of who is actually God. And we find increasingly that Hindus, they don't mind to eat meat, and even from families that they couldn't imagine previously, but it becomes a very normal thing. Why is that? Because they have no knowledge of Ved Shastra, that whatever is that, Swakarma Phalam Bhuk Puman, everyone has to receive the results of his karmic activity. Eating meat is sinful. That's the minimum reason not to eat meat, because it's sinful. But they don't know, and not only don't they know, but because of this modern Western style of education, they tend to not only not know the Vedic knowledge and not accept it, but jest about it and think that it's just, what is this? We don't believe in all this. This is all foolishness. So this is the situation, because they're not being taught these things. So this, here we have here, this whole purport and this whole section of Bhagavatam dedicated to understanding that we're not the body, the body is separate from the soul. Narada Muni is in a roundabout, allegorical way teaching the basics of spiritual knowledge to King Prachina Parishad. Now, the relevance for us is this, that if we don't regularly discuss these things, then we won't know them. We may think that we know them, we may think that even our children know them, but they won't, unless we systematically and regularly teach these things. That's why I make some allusion at the beginning of the class to Gopi Leelas, because we find increasingly in our society that there's a tendency to discuss so many different pastimes, not only Gopi Leelas, but more of that, and it's just presumed when we discuss pastimes that we already know all the, we're already fixed in understanding the basics. But many times we may not be. And therefore, without understanding very clearly the basics, that we're not the body, and the senses, Sharira Vidyaja Aljarindra Tahika, the senses are a network of paths leading to death. The body is a network of ignorance, and the senses, they have paths leading to the death of the soul. So without clearly understanding this, if we simply hear leelas, we'll take them like nice stories. We can't actually advance by hearing leela unless we're fixed in the basic knowledge of Krishna consciousness. And therefore, we should hear these things again and again. Even if we think, oh, I already know that, but do we really know it? Knowing, again, academically, theoretically is one thing, but if we really know we're not this body, then we won't be interested in sense gratification. So, can we honestly say that I understand I am not the body? Once Prabhupada was lecturing in the second chapter of Gita, so again and again the topic came up, and daily in class Prabhupada was dilating in different ways on the subject that the body is not the self. The self is the Atma, the soul. So a devotee was bold enough to say to Prabhupada, could you speak about something else? We already know this. Prabhupada said, you don't know this. Therefore I have to speak again and again. Every day. We find, last time I had darshan of Srila Prabhupada during his manifest appearance was in October of 1977. And Prabhupada hadn't eaten anything for a long time, and the devotees sat him up. They'd brought some strawberries, and Prabhupada was going to take some prasadam, which he hadn't done for a long time. So they set Prabhupada up, and Prabhupada, in a very weak voice, started saying, Sharir Vidyajal. And then it seems he forgot all about the prasad. He started preaching to all the devotees present. Now, we're not the body, we have to control the senses, we have to control the tongue. I was surprised. Here's Prabhupada, he's looking so weak and sick, and he's surrounded by so many leading devotees, and he's preaching what we might expect that he would preach to even a beginner. But then we are beginners. And even, you see, Krishna was teaching this to Arjuna. Arjuna is not a beginner. But as long as we're in this material world, it's a very dangerous situation. Unless we're fully in Krishna consciousness, there's always the possibility to revert to non-Krishna consciousness or Maya consciousness. And Maya doesn't have any special VIP treatment for anyone. She drags anyone wants to dance with Maya, she drags them down to the most degraded situation, as far as the person is willing to go, however exalted they may have been. She has no consideration of that. Actually, for one who's been exalted, if he's dragged down low, then it's hoped that he may wake up in his shame and come back to his previous situation. There's a story of one of the Alvas in Sri Sampradaya, who was very great devotee, but then he fell into the most sinful way of life, very severely. Then he was suffering severe karmic reactions. But then again he remembered, oh, Krishna, Bilvamangala Thakur, great devotee. But then he had some attraction to a prostitute, or a girlfriend. It was his girlfriend. I mean, she may not have been a paid prostitute, but Prabhupada said, in our country we call prostitute, in your country you call girlfriend. So we think that girlfriend, that's according to Vedic culture, one has a wife, and anyone else who a man, any other woman that a man may cohabit with is on the level of a prostitute, no better. Nowadays we think it's very normal just to have a girlfriend or two, but it's not respectable. It's not only is not respectable, it's sinful. So Bilvamangala Thakur, in his previous life he was a great devotee, but he was attached to his girlfriend, who He went through so many difficulties to come to reach it, then she stung him with her words. That you are so much attached to this body of mine, which is only stool and blood and mute. Yasya atma buddhi kunape tridhatu ke. It is simply made of bile, mucus, and air. If you were, how much benefit you have, you would have had if you had the same attachment for Krishna. Prabhupada explained in one lecture that then Bill Vaughan said, oh, Krishna. It was like a thunderbolt. It was, Krishna. Oh, yes, Krishna. I forgot Krishna. And immediately, yes, I must find Krishna. I must go to Krishna. So immediately, whatever he had, he left everything. Started from Vrindavan. But again, the same tendency. Seeing a beautiful woman, again he became attracted. Then, mother, give me your pins from your hand. Put out the arrows. Now I shall find Krishna. So much sincerity to find Krishna. It's not a generally recommended process. But just see the determination. If by this I'm not going to find out Krishna, then no need of this eye. If it's an obstacle, pratikul yasya varjana, give up everything, then it will stop our Krishna consciousness. If it's an obstacle, then it should be removed. This is the lesson to be had from this incident. So much serious to understand Krishna. So, Maya is there. We may escape. If we fall into Maya, we, by the grace of Krishna, generally that Kaunteya Pratijani Name Bhakta Pranashyati. Krishna tells Arjuna to announce that. O Arjuna, declare it that my devotee is never destroyed. Krishna looks after the devotee. But we should not take it as a license to forget Krishna. For a devotee who is very serious to understand Krishna, but who circumstantially slips, Krishna will look after. But if we're thinking, well, you know, I've done enough Krishna consciousness for this lifetime, that should be enough to keep me going. So let me, now it's time to enjoy. Then I can get more realization of how bad the material life is, and then I can be more serious about Krishna consciousness if I just go and experience the material world a bit more. Right? Reasonable philosophy. Sounds very reasonable, yeah. If you think so, you're in trouble. So we may rationalize and reasonize. We find so many, not so many, but some devotees who they not really devotees because they want to be in Maya, but no one wants to say, yes, I'm wrong. So they'll say, no, actually, and they'll give so many reasons why we have to do this and we have to do so many diversions from the path of bhakti. We have to, before you can do bhakti, you have to get full Reiki treatment. Then you have to have everything in your house adjusted according to vastu. And then you have to go through a special counseling course. And then when you've done all these different things, then you can really do bhakti. But this is not what Krishna says. Krishna says, come now, sarvadhaman parityaja mame kam sharanam raja. So you might have a little Reiki here or there or something like that. Knock out the wall and put a new window in and block it up somewhere else. Of course, you could also donate the money to the temple. So you probably get more spiritual benefits from that than knocking out the window and putting in a new one. Filling it up one place and putting it in another place, like they do in Vastu. So, anyway, you might do these things, but the point is we have to surrender to Krishna. And even if your house is the most perfect vastu, or whatever, then if we don't chant Hare Krishna in it, then it's completely useless. And even if the house is like the vastu expert comes and faints when he sees it because it's so bad. But if we're chanting Hare Krishna inside, it is much better than the perfect Vastu home with no chanting Hare Krishna. So it's a matter of keeping things in perspective. And anyway, what Vastu? Everyone's got a stool room in their home which is completely against any Vedic principles. So and drinking water which has already been recycled 20 times, it's all stool-infected water. Of course, it's chemically safe. At least you don't get poisoned by the stool, you get poisoned by the chemicals, which is supposed to be not so bad. But from the point of view of purity, it's completely contaminated. You can't bathe deities in such water, and then you have to go and get the bottled water. But that's also contaminated because it's handled by people who are eating meat and so many different things. So from the point of view of purity and all the normal Vedic standards, there's nothing in the modern age. You can make some adjustments here and there, but basically everything's contaminated. Therefore, Harem Nama, Harem Nama, Harem Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kalo, Nasteva, 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 Gatira Nyata. This is a very good verse. We should all have great faith in this verse. This is by far far more important than any mundane adjustment. If we think I have to adjust this, I have to adjust that, I have to adjust something else. But we have to adjust our lives to be centered on the holy names of Krishna, isn't it? And that will take us back to Krishna. That is the essence. Jive Doya Krishna Nama Sarva Dharma Sa. The essence of all dharma is to be merciful to the jivas by preaching Krishna consciousness and ourselves chanting the names of Krishna. So we have to hear these topics again and again and again. Basic things, because we tend to take it for granted that yes, we already know all these things. And therefore now it's time for Gopi Leela or Reiki Leela or this thing and that thing and something else. But what is actually Krishna consciousness? We shouldn't presume. I already heard so many classes. I went through the Bhakti program. I got a Bhakti Shastri degree. That proves I already know everything about Krishna consciousness. So I don't have to study any books anymore. And especially not Prabhupada's books, because they're so basic and we need something better. So with this kind of attitude, we end up not being in Krishna consciousness or being in some imagined kind of Krishna consciousness. So that's why we have to regularly hear the basic topics, as actually basic, not only basic. Prabhupada has given everything. Just like in his Bhagavad Gita purpose, Prabhupada has given us Raja Leela. Right there in the Mamana Bhava Madhvakta, Prabhupada says that one should concentrate on the form of Krishna with two hands holding a flute. One should not divert his mind to other forms of the Lord. So it's right, everything is there. But due to whatever, laziness or lack of application, we have the tendency to think that, I already know all these things. But we may theoretically know about them. Practically, do we know, do we really know that we're not the body? So let's say it all again, we are not this body. We are not this body. This body is not me. The body is temporary. I will not remain in this body forever. As sure as death, we are sure to die. But if we understand that we are spirit soul and that we have our eternal relationship, loving relationship of service to Krishna, then we will go to Krishna. That is the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement. So all this knowledge rests on this principle. We are not the body. A very strong influence of Maya that makes us think it's difficult not to think that we're not the body, because we experience like that, it feels like that. Just like did anyone ever get bitten by a wasp? Mostly those from southern Europe, there's more wasps there. Well, I just did a few days ago. I never got bitten by a wasp before. It was 3 o'clock in the morning, better than any alarm clock. So it's so painful. It's just a little, just in my toe, actually. And just how big is the place where the wasp stings? Just a tiny little thing. So painful. And it's just an example. It's difficult to think you're not the body when you're feeling such pain. then we have to understand. Well, it's not me. It's only the material energy is interacting in such a way that I superficially am feeling this pain, but it's not me. So it's very useful knowledge also, because we all have to suffer so many bodily difficulties. So it's very good knowledge. So the devotee, by having this knowledge, he rises above the disturbances of material life. He doesn't become disturbed by the disturbances. He's only disturbed if the disturbances are such that it affects his service to Krishna. But his service to Krishna will never stop, whatever the disturbances. Just like Prabhupada was asked, well, what is this, a big, great war? And what shall we do? Prabhupada said, well, chant Hare Krishna. And what shall we do? I think we should go and hide away, run away to the South Pacific Islands or something like that. No, just go on chanting Hare Krishna, whatever. This is super. Prabhupada was in the Second World War, didn't affect him. They were telling him, he just sat down to take prasad, and then the air raid siren went off, and they're all saying, come on, get in the air raid shelter. I'm taking prasad. Afterwards I'll go. Prabhupada said, the bombs are falling. And I was thinking, this is Krishna in another form. So this is this elevated consciousness we get from understanding the basic principles of spiritual life. We're not the body. Everything that goes on in this material world is simply some phantasmagoria which is nothing to do with reality. Reality is Krishna, life with Krishna in the spiritual world. We have to hear this regularly. Otherwise, we may hear about this. If we only hear about the leelas in the spiritual world, but we don't understand it, then we won't actually have contact with the spiritual world. We'll tend to think of some kind of story. And we see like that again in India. We see in India there are so many people who go to listen to Bhagavad Katha and Ram Katha. But they have no spiritual, they have no motive to make it any advancement in spiritual life. They think, oh, that's a very nice story, and we heard some nice Ram Katha. Let's go home and see what movie's on the TV now. Because they're not actually elevated by that. They take it as a pious form of entertainment, that's all. So we have to regularly hear from Prabhupada the basic knowledge of spiritual life. Prabhupada's given us everything, but he was very concerned to make our basis very strong. Because if the foundation is strong, then you can make a nice building. But if we're not concerned to make the foundation strong, you know, you've built so many buildings. You can make a nice building and it'll collapse very soon. It's not safe. If we don't have our foundation strong, then we may have a very nice building. We may know so many different gopi leelas and this, that, but we're not in a safe position. Hare Krishna. Is there any question about this or comment? I'm not saying gopi leelas should be banned, but everything should be in perspective.
This last word you said, in India, it's when I was there recently.
It's become very popular in the last 10 years or so, otherwise people didn't bother, didn't even know about it.
So when you build a temple, should
you... Yeah, traditionally temple, you see these sampuras, they all design temples according to the principles of Vastu.
But some of our temples all over the world are...
They're not, yeah, in any way.
But there is no harm or anything.
That's the main thing. If we chant Hare Krishna, then Jai Shakal Vipod, Bhakti Vinod, Bolen Jatan, Nam Gai. And we chant, if we're chanting, then all bad influences will go away. Of course, we should build temples according to principles of Vastu. That's going to Shastra. I'm not saying Vastu is bad, I'm just saying that everything should be in perspective. It's not the vital principle of our spiritual lives. It can be employed, it should be employed in the service of Krishna. But the point I was making is that sometimes devotees, they get so much... It's just one example of there's so many things. Astrology, which is also a Vedic science. And Reiki is probably originally a Vedic science, because if there's any knowledge in human society, then it's coming from the Veda originally. But... The tendency is that devotees seem to think that these things are essential to our Krishna consciousness, because we can get, just like from Reiki treatment or something, we can immediately perceive the result. And it does improve our life. It can do. So and then we think, oh, this is something very wonderful. But we don't understand how wonderful is Krishna consciousness, how much that improves our life. So yeah, if we're sick, we can get Reiki treatment or any other kind of treatment that helps. But the point is, sickness or health, that is not our aim. Because anyway, the body has to die. So if the body is healthy, good, we can serve Krishna with a healthy body. But if Krishna ordains, or according to some karma or whatever, we are sick, then we should go on chanting Hare Krishna. It's a matter of perspective. I'm not saying that we shouldn't, or that Vasto and all these things should not be considered, but just the tendency to take it out of perspective. Well, in traditional Vedic culture, like the sthapatis, or those who would build especially temples, they would have, because it's, you see, you just can't teach Vastu in some course. Any Vedic science, you have to spend years studying. If one is actually to understand, you have to study under a guru, and it's very specialized. But then ordinary people, every ordinary person in Vedic culture would have some basic knowledge of all these things, Vastu, Ayurveda, astrology, because even where to place your utensils in the kitchen, some basic things would be there. Everyone would know that. But for detailed knowledge, then the Vaidya, that means the Ayurvedic doctor, he would have detailed knowledge. And ordinary things, like if you get loose motions, that even without studying Ayurveda, the grandmother will run out, get a few herbs and press the juice and drink it, and it's finished. So that was basic grandmother's knowledge. You didn't have to go and study a big coursework. So these things maybe had as bridge preaching, but so-called bridge preaching, yeah. The problem I see with it, there are certain problems that can arise in bridge preaching. One is that we tend to think that the bridge is more important than the other side that we're supposed to be going over. We tend to emphasize it too much. Another thing is that we may not have very good knowledge of the other side itself, or we may not have full knowledge or conviction about what Krishna consciousness actually is. I've spoken with two devotees who are engaged in academic studies, who are supposed to be doing, they're at the university, and they're supposed to be at the university so that they can preach to the and give Krishna consciousness to the academia. And I asked them, have you studied all of Prabhupada's books? No. Then what are they going to teach? They're full-time engaged in studying Kami's garbage. And their head is getting filled with this. And they don't even know what's in, they haven't even read once all of Prabhupada's books. And how are they going to preach? What are they going to do? And so rather, it's not bridge preaching. They're going on the bridge and they're crossing onto the Kami side themselves, instead of bringing the Kamis onto the bridge and bringing them over to the Krishna conscious side. So if one is very much fixed in Krishna consciousness, it's possible to do like this. They're very much absorbed in Shastra and understanding the basic principles of how we receive knowledge from Shastra. So-called knowledge not received from Shastra is not knowledge at all. But, and what the essence is, because we may become neo-Hindus or something like that, we start to think that, I mean, for those of us who are not born in Hindu families, then we become so much enamored by all these different things that what the real thing, which is Krishna consciousness and knowledge from Shastra, we tend to think that it's more important to present all these other things and then people can come to Krishna consciousness. But actually it's not required, because we can directly present Krishna consciousness and people will come. So why all this indirect stuff? Is it really necessary? Another thing is, if you find that many people, you may preach them like UFOs and astrology and so many things with the idea of awake, but we awaken their interest not in Krishna consciousness but in something else. So that when we do eventually introduce Krishna consciousness, they might not be interested in that at all. So it's basically a way of making friendship or winning their respect. But you can do that by giving them prasadam also. So what I see, there's so much scope for preaching directly Krishna consciousness, which we're not utilizing. So I mean, what's the need or the point of all this indirect preaching? The thing is that we ourselves tend to become less fixed in Krishna consciousness, we become afraid to speak the truth as it is. That life without Krishna consciousness is simply useless, and we think we always have to cover up Krishna consciousness with some euphemisms and this and that, and we can't preach strongly and directly as is required. So there is scope for this. Prabhupada spoke about the BI scientists, but he said that we should present the principles of Bhagavatam in language that the scientists can relate to. So there is some scope for that, but there's some danger involved in that also. And unless it's really necessary, what's the point? So many people who if we simply present Krishna consciousness straightforwardly, will take up interest in. We have festival program, so many people come, so many people are interested. So we should remember, Harem Nama, Harem Nama, Harem Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kalona, Stevana, 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 Tiranyata. The Holy Name has tremendous power. We should not underestimate that. That even people who are not interested, well, they can become interested by hearing the holy names, attending of these festivals, taking Prabhupada's books, these basic principles of Krishna consciousness. Yeah, please.
Right. The perception I have on, say, I suppose you could call cultural sciences related to the Vedas, e.g. Ayurveda, etc., astrology, etc., is that we have a situation, I think, where over the years a lot of devotees have come in the temple for say 5 years, 10 years, 5 years, whatever, and then a lot of men end up getting married and they move out, where of course employment becomes one of their main things in it, one of their main meditations by necessity. And that it's very difficult, I think, for trained devotees to actually go in and work for some kind of karmi guy who eats cows for breakfast or whatever, you know, ends up working at Asda or in some supermarket somewhere. So I think these Vedic sciences, where devotees can be employed in where there is a market, either astrology, feng shui, or vastu, according to what you wish, etc., it might be a better compromise for them trying to earn a living.
Yeah.
If they can't do it,
that's a possible consideration. Yeah. But actually, if we're going to do astrology, we should do it properly. That means we should go to get trained by a guru, not that we pick up, teach yourself astrology in 20 days or something. And then it's a very serious thing, giving people advice for their lives. And it should be understood in the perspective of Krishna consciousness also. Because mostly astrologers, they only advise people according to what they perceive as their material benefit. But it's just like a devotee may see, well, in your chart you're going to lose all your money. That's going to be very good for your spiritual advancement. There is the possibility, but then there are all these cultural considerations that traditionally the persons who, the astrologer, the doctor, they didn't take payment from people. And it tends to, the fact that we take payment that tends to cloud our discrimination also. And that's well known in the medical profession, that doctors, they're more interested in, you know, they want to cut open your body so they can cut open your pocket. So I just got an email, one devotee in India, his wife had a cesarean delivery. They all have cesarean deliveries because if they say, and the doctors say, anyone with money, they say, oh, your wife has to have a cesarean delivery because it's very dangerous otherwise with the child. And they're all happy because they get money from doing it. Why so many? It's some money. Any birth is dangerous. But they say, oh, cesarean. So that tendency is there, that when one is doing for money, then one's tends to be clouded. So therefore, one's whole approach tends to be clouded. So really, what we need to do is go back to the land and have simple society based on Vedic principles. Then all these cultural anomalies, and then we can really start to work on these cultural anomalies. Why devotees, they should have to work in some supermarket, or work in, or even work as an astrologer, getting money. So that's not. That's maybe better than working in a supermarket, maybe. But maybe it's not also, because at least in the supermarket, it's clear you're doing a job and you're getting money. But if you work as, if you're an astrologer, then one mixes up the Vedic knowledge with, it becomes mixed up with his desires for economic development. So he may not be able to present it as purely as required. It's a big discussion, which maybe we shouldn't get into the intricacies of it now, but the overall solution that Prabhupada gave is go to the land and live simply, which we seem to have, as a movement, more or less given up on, apart from a few individuals here. But really, Krishna consciousness, it can't really develop on the platform of modern materialistic life. It's like trying to, you know, it's like trying to run PC programs on a Mac or something. It may seem like it should work, but it doesn't. There's a different concept altogether. Sorry?
Pardon my ignorance.
You shouldn't be ignorant.
In this particular
field. You should know all these things.
I mean, in the present world situation, where it is all going digital, technological, everything is everywhere, my question is one. Whilst the world is advancing, we still need to keep a balance between Krishna consciousness and our daily work. Am I right in saying that? Or
well, first of all, we don't consider this to be advancing, simply to have the fact that you can pull out a camera and then 1 minute later the photo can be on the other side of the world. That's not really advancement of human civilization. Real advancement means advancement of consciousness. We have all these technological gadgets, but kaam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarya, becoming free from these, that is actual advancement of civilization. So our understanding of advancement, the Krishna conscious understanding of advancement, is something completely different. Keep a balance. Yes, well, everyone has to do some kind of work. But we should understand that whatever work we're doing is only for the maintenance of the body. The body is temporary. We are Atma. So the most important thing is Atma Vikas. not bhautik vikas, spiritual, adhyatmik vikas, spiritual development, not simply mundane development. So really the balance should be to minimize our material side and increase the spiritual side. It's not that spiritual life is something to be fitted in into our material life, but rather the material necessities should be fulfilled in the least time-consuming and difficult manner so that we can concentrate on our spiritual necessities. Have you got Srila Prabhupada's books?
Yes, I have got them. Thank you for this.
I'm requesting, you see, we're going to discuss now for a few minutes.
Yeah.
I'll answer your question. But what's really needed for yourself and for all of us is to study these shastras very carefully, daily. That will make you more balanced. So please do that. You have the books, so please read them. Yeah, and
the question thing is that, see, our Hindu religion is so vast, so vast. We have different deities. So you keep on wandering from one deity to another deity, and you know, just going on here and there. And it's not that you are not religious, you are religious. The fact is that you go to one sect, this is it. You got another sect, this is being taught. The question is not being negative news on this. Okay, I'm talking in the total sense of bias. What is that really? Okay, I have today become Christian consciousness. Tomorrow I go to another temple and this is what it is. So, what is that sort of thing that should come to our mind and say, okay, this is it?
Yes, that question. We should find the answer to. Otherwise, in this life we'll be wandering from temple to temple, and then in future lives we'll be wandering from body to body. If we don't find out what is the actual truth, you should find out. That's why I'm saying you please read these books. Because in these books, which are the original shastras, is described what is that param satya. What is the absolute truth? What is the highest truth? Not presented in a dogmatic or sectarian way, but the original shastras presented with commentaries which follow the teachings of all the recognized acharyas. So, we will say, Ishvara Parama Krishna. Krishna is the supreme absolute truth, supreme personality of Godhead. And if you, tomorrow you may go to another temple and they'll say something else. So my proposition to you is that you have these books, you please study, you apply your intelligence, which is given to you by God, and pray to God. You may, that whoever you are, you please reveal yourself. And if you're sincere, we are confident that without our having to try to harangue you or brainwash you, you will clearly understand that indeed Krishna is the supreme absolute truth, and surrender to him is the purpose of life.
I agree 100%. You go to Vrindavan.
Actually, if you don't mind, I may finish this here because
I'm sorry.
We can talk outside. Is it alright? Because I think the others. You all want to go on with this question?
Yes.
We all have different duties. I was supposed to finish in 8:30. No? Anyway, if you don't mind, you can go on.
Sorry?
No one's protesting. All right. Okay, go on.
Can I go?
Yes.
I have traveled around everywhere in India. I've been to Vrindavan, I've been to Rishikesh, I've been to many places. Feeling that, I don't say that, no. If you go to Vrindavan, you have so many temples, this ashram, that ashram, that ashram. You know, you have speakers going down here and there, you know. So why all these people do not congregate and follow one thing? Vrindavan is a seat of Krishna. Why is it not that everybody congregates? Now if you go to down south, okay, you go to Haridwar, so you go to Nagwara, okay, you have that. You go to down Tripur Dipwaraji, different sort of people have. It sent us to one place.
All right. Well, Nathdwara, Tirupati, they're all places of worship of the same Krishna.
Vishnu. Yes.
So that is the same Krishna being worshipped in different forms. Why there are many sects is described in Srimad Bhagavatam.
Just pardon me. See, you go to
Vrindavan,
yes, you make darshan of properly. You go to Nathdwara. You know, when you take just a glimpse of Srinathji, okay? There are priests who have whips on their hands, come on. Yeah. So why is that not coming into their minds? And they are priests.
But still, and let's go back to the first question. Why there are so many sects?
Yeah.
That is described in Srimad Bhagavatam because there is one absolute truth. But Maya takes many forms, and even in the name of worship of Krishna, that may be influenced by Maya. Just like so many people come to this temple and then they play football on the lawn. I don't know if they do now, but they used to. They still do like that?
Cricket.
So they're coming to Krishna, but not really very interested in Krishna. So some Krishna consciousness is there, but Maya also. So when we're very sincere and serious to understand Krishna, Krishna will reveal to us the path by which we can go to Him. About the priests whipping, well, the temple is too small. And it's not... I mean, it doesn't hurt, it's just some tassels.
So if I go to Hare Krishna...
So,
if I go to Hare Krishna Delhi, you can, just as open over here, you can see Krishna.
No, even you see in many of the temples, just like on Janmashtami Day, we have the same in our temples in India. They have barriers and people are moved on. It's just practical. That's right. You worship Krishna at home and you can have darshan. Or you come here, now you can have darshan as much as you like.
No, I'm not criticizing. Hare Krishna. I cannot understand something that...
All right, yes. There are many things to be understood. There are many things. So then I request you please... make a point of reading Prabhupada's books. Now, to read these books, one will have to have more than curiosity. One will have to have genuine sincerity to understand Krishna. That's a challenge for you. How much do you want Krishna? Hare Krishna. I'll finish them. Hare Krishna.
You didn't put the, I think with this